Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Educating for Success show. We bring families together with home business.
Hey, this is Ray Perry at Educating for Success, coming to you from the backside of nowhere in southern Tennessee. I am your hostess for today's show, and my guest is one of my best friends. He's also one of my advisors. I listen to him, and he tells me all kinds of crazy things to do. He's helped me save money. He's helped me make money. And so I am so excited to be able to introduce him to you today, because I know he can do the same thing for you that he's done for me. So one of my best friends and one of my accounting advisors, my main accounting advisor and tax advisor from Longmont, Colorado, Mauricio Martinez. Welcome, Mauricio.
Woo-hoo! The crowd goes wild. Hi, everybody. Nice to be on the show.
Yeah, it is so nothing great to have you here.
Nothing more exciting than having an accountant on a radio show, let me tell you.
Well, you know, the very first time I told you that I met you, it was at an internet marketing conference, and I met you, and you said you were an accountant, and I said, I started to say, are you sure you know who you are? Because you're not like any accountant I've ever met in my whole life. In fact, I don't know if you remember this or not, but at that conference, you were trying to figure out what you could go into other than accounting. Do you remember that?
Absolutely. I totally remember that.
So why on earth are you thinking about that?
Well, you know what? That's actually one of the one of the things that, you know, we're going to talk about in this conference is business growth secret, and this secret is funny because it's we call it a secret because nobody in the educational system, at least I don't know of one, that actually teaches people how to build a business. Pardon me. And in that situation, for example, you told me, you know, you said, well, why would you like to get out of accounting? I mean, because that's what you know. And I had this thing about wanting to be somebody that I really wasn't. And that's kind of one of the things about the business growth secret is that you really need to take a look at who you are and what God has blessed you with. And many times, unfortunately, these things that God has blessed you with are gifts. You didn't earn them. You know, so many times we just don't really, we take them for granted, I guess is probably the best way to put it. So we don't think they're that good, and we always look, you know, that old saying where the grass is always greener on the other side, right? And We don't take a look at those things that are so incredibly awesome about us. And in my case, for example, when I went to John Childers' event, which is where we met, I was trying to be everything but an accountant. And I still remember, by the way, this is kind of one of the stories that I will be telling at the seminar, is that John Childers, after taking this course and all this other stuff and actually listening to you saying, oh, Mauricio, we really need somebody actually who works in accounting and is able to explain these things. I thought, no. I want to inspire people. I want the mountaintop experience and, you know, not this administrative stuff. But one of the things that John Childers actually spent 45 minutes of his time, which was really, this is after I had accosted him, so to speak. I mean, I traveled everywhere John was speaking or teaching, I was there for about a year. And finally I told John, I said, I'm doing something really wrong. And he sat down with me for 45 minutes. But one of the things that he told me was really that, you know what, this is what you're good at. This is what you need to teach. And I thought, oh, don't tell me. I don't want to go back there. And he gave me some really great ideas in terms of how I could actually move forward. But I would say that, you know, it's funny. Although I get I love the comment, you know, you're like no other accountant we've ever met. That also makes me a lot more marketable because one of the things about Dave and I, so Dave Hawkins is my partner, and you actually can see our pictures at HawkinsMartinez.com. The first one, even it's funny, it's Hawkins Martinez, right? So you would expect to see Hawkins first before Martinez, but you actually see my picture first. Anyway, so Dave Hawkins is my partner, and Dave's an absolutely fabulous guy. And by the way, Dave says hi, right? And one of the things about Dave is that we really, really care about our people. We really care about our clients. One of the things that we found about other firms, accounting firms, CPA firms, EA firms, their business model is very different than ours. And their business model is get as many tax returns in as you can and get them out as quickly as you can and don't worry too much about the client. We're different in the sense that, and I think Dave actually explained this to me really, really well recently, because we were trying to figure out what's the net profit, the highest net profit that our firm can get. Well, it's pretty high, but I thought, well, can we go higher? And one of the things he said to me, he said, well, Mauricio, we can. However, here's the point. If we go higher in the net profit, we're also going to go lower on quality of life. And I said, well, what do you mean? I said, well, you and I both really enjoy talking to our clients and actually helping our clients grow and prosper. He said, you know, if you look at the models of a lot of these accounting firms that are making a ton of money, their model is to spend as little time as possible with a client. And I realized, oh, okay, so there's a balance here in terms of how much we want to make as a company and this whole issue of quality of life. And that really comes back down to who are you? And a lot of times what we do is we literally kind of forget who we are because we see this shiny thing out there that is going to make us all this money. And then once we get all that money, we're going to be just wonderful and happy. And we find out later that God gave us that gift of service, whatever that might be. When we're not using it, you know what? It doesn't matter how much cash is flowing in. We're going to be just outright miserable because God sent us here for a mission. And he put that those skills, those talents are embedded in our system, in our, you know, he made us that way. And we will find that great joy when we're actually able to use those gifts. And, you know, hopefully if we do it right, we'll see a good profit. And he'll always give us a good profit, quite honestly. And that's one of the things that we point out in the Business Growth Secret is those gifts that God gave us and how to use them properly. You know, it's one of the things that I hear a lot of, which is if you do what you love, the money will follow. You know, that's kind of a half truth, which, you know, half truths kind of end up with no truth in them. There is some truth to do what you love, the money will follow. But quite honestly, it's more like act in love and the money will follow. Because, see, when to say do what you love, a lot of times that just sounds like, you know, whatever you feel like doing, just do it and the money will follow. But, you know, that's not love. Love is giving of yourself. If you are willing to give that gift that God gave you and turn it around and give it to people and do it in a business, for example, then, yeah, the money will follow. But here's the important thing. That gift, and I think the Benham brothers actually said that on stage last year, I believe they were on your stage, and they did a wonderful job because it's also in the book, What Color Is Your Parachute, written by Richard Bowles, and that is that where your greatest joy and the world's greatest need intersect, there is your greatest profit, and really where you're going to find your greatest joy. And that's really what the Business Growth Secret is about. It's finding that connection so that not only do you make a good profit and a very high profit for a small business, but that you also find that which brings you the greatest joy. Because quite honestly, why do you want all that money if you're not going to have joy in it, you know?
Right. Well, and that is so true. What we've taught people for years is find what you love to do and do that and then figure out how to monetize it. Because it sounds like it's like when you say the money's going to just follow, the money will follow when you do what you love. First of all, it sounds selfish, and then second of all, it sounds easy. And one thing I've learned about business is it can't be selfish because it has to be about serving the customers. It has to be about finding out what the customers that you serve want or need and then figuring out how to give it to them. And then the second half of that is when you finally figure out what you love to do, figuring out how to monetize that. And the problem is so many people swap hours for dollars in a self employed type of situation without creating a business and without any type of systems in place or anything like that, and without outsourcing. So they have to learn all those types of things. But also, they just don't stop and figure out how to monetize it. And that's one of the things I love about Joel Salatin, who is our keynote at our conference coming up this year. You mentioned our conference. You're actually going to be one of our faculty members at our annual home business conference coming up in Louisville, Kentucky, August 12th to 14th, which we'll talk about in a minute. But one of the things I love about Joel Salatin is he's done exactly what you just said, and that is he's taken a traditional thing like farming, which is typically something people lose a lot of money in, and it gets harder and harder to make money in that realm because of things changing. Yet he has stopped and asked himself questions and put systems in place and tried things experimentally in order to increase their bottom line. And so that's what he's our keynote this year. I love bringing people like Joel Salatin in to challenge the way that people think. And that's what I'm excited about, having you come back and do again, because every time we've ever had you on the stage in the past, first of all, you're so entertaining and lighthearted and happy and wonderful. So it's always fun to have you there. But also you give us some really good advice. So I just want to share with you a real quick what I did that you told us to do last year. Well, actually, it was about 2 or 3 years ago. You told us to go get credit cards, go get one for personal and one for business. If you get Southwest cards, it dumps Southwest points into your account every time you buy something. And if you get a Capital One card, it dumps into all the other airlines. And so I did that, and I have booked about 8 flights in the last couple of months, and I have to pay a $5 tax every time I book a flight. And so pretty much the last 8 flights I've booked have been absolutely free other than the $5 tax. And I just want to say thank you for telling us that, because in this day and age, it's not popular to have credit cards. And as long as you manage them and you pay them off at the end of the month and you make them become a tool instead of letting them run your life as a lord, they can be very, very helpful to your business. And I don't know how many hundreds of dollars I've saved. I should probably go back and calculate that and give you that number of how much I have saved on flights just because I did the one thing that you told us to do a couple years ago.
Oh, awesome. Thank you. You know, it's a funny thing. Let me take just a couple of things on that. First of all, I just want to go back to Joe Salatin really quick. One of the things about Joe that I found absolutely fantastic, you know, he has a wonderful presentation. But then somebody asked him something about the school, you know, I mean, about his teaching. And you could see this incredible joy come into his face when he began to talk about all the students who have learned, you know, through his program. And that's kind of like what I was trying to say about the whole joy part, you know, that there's, yeah, in order for him to do that, he has to create a business that can actually support that. He can't just go out and say, oh, you know what, I want to teach young people how to farm profitably and just go and do that. No, he can't do that, because you have to create a base that allows you to do that. And he created that base. Nevertheless, he gets that amazing joy of actually being able to teach. And actually, Ray, you do the exact same thing. I mean, you have this wonderful conference, you have all these businesses, but, you know, you always light up every single time a young person, or even an older person like me, every single time you see somebody who has gone from, you know, I want to do this, to I'm doing it, to, oh, my gosh, this is amazing. I mean, tears come out of your eyes usually, because you see that change. And, you know, that is what makes you, it just thrills you, you know, and it's very much like Joe. So that's one. Number two, I wanted to say, you know, in terms of that whole thing about credit cards, and I know there's a lot of people, and this is to all those people who are just thinking like, you know, credit cards are evil. You know, credit cards are not evil. Credit cards are a tool. They're a tool just like a hammer is a tool. You know, if you look through murders, you will find that murders are committed sometimes by hammers. You know, that's still, you know, so that doesn't make hammers evil. It was used for an evil purpose. Yeah, credit cards can get away from you, but if you're disciplined to make sure that you make that payment, they can be extremely profitable. Also, there's people who actually love to say, you know, we actually have a client. We had a client who came in and said, you know, we did their tax return, and I got his tax return in front of him, and he says, well, thanks, but so can I pay for it later? And I said, you know, we take credit cards. And he goes, oh, no, I'm totally against credit cards. Now, listen to what's happening here, right? He wants me to give him credit. Although, but he's not willing to get a credit card, but he's asking for credit. He's asking for me to be his bank, you know? So it's like, wait a minute, did you just hear what you just said? You know? And I didn't say this to him, but I mean, I felt badly for him because I thought he just did not get the idea behind what credit is. And all of the successful firms, and Dave and I, our background is working as controllers. So let me give you a brief history of where Dave and I actually have come in. So when my entire career started with actually working for nonprofit corporations. So I know nonprofits. My first 5 years of my career was for nonprofits. I was manager of the financial manager for several nonprofits, including a theater company. Usually the firms were in about $5.5 million in terms of annual revenue. After that, I went into consulting. I also went into teaching. I'm actually a certified instructor for California for accounting and financial systems. Besides that, then I went into a lot of consulting. Then I went into, right after, actually I met Ray in 2003, I realized that what I really wanted to do was consulting and tax, and I really got heavy into tax and consulting, became an enrolled agent, which is what I am today, and met Dave. Dave Hawkins actually comes from also the same similar background. He worked as a controller for several firms. Controller is basically the top accounting position in the firm. He worked for nonprofits as well as for-profits, just like I did, and he started his tax firm about 20 years ago. So about 10 years ago, he and I met and created online small business consulting, and we did seminars. And actually, that was the first seminar we put together, was the Business Growth Secret Intensive. And it went really, really well, but at the same time, the whole seminar business went down. And I learned something there. We broke up the firm, and I went and did something else, went to, as a controller in San Jose, and he continued his practice here. But what I learned there was what John Childers had told me, which was, you know, what you're doing is awesome. We got great reviews on the seminar. But he said, Mauricio, you need a base. You don't have a base yet. Get your base first and then go and do all this great stuff. So learned my lesson. I went back and I got my base. And that's how I have my accounting firm now with Dave. And now I can actually go and do all those, you know, really exciting things that I wanted to do about teaching other people, just like Joe's doing, just like Ray's doing. So I'm pretty thrilled about that. So that's where Dave and I have come to, and that's how, you know, we've come to now Hawkins and Martinez. And one of the things that we really emphasize, because I think a lot of people have this concern about credit, and, you know, most of the firms that Dave and I have worked for, actually all the firms, I should say, that Dave and I have worked for have a credit line. A credit line is a short-term credit available for firms so that they can do services or sell products and then get paid. Now, a lot of times, for example, you will, for example, as an accounting firm, when we do a tax return, we're not charging them upfront for the tax return, but I'm still working on it. I'm still spending money. I'm still paying rent. I'm still paying electricity. I'm still having to support my family, but I'm not getting paid by the client until later, right? So that's in a small scale. On a large scale, you have firms that are still small business firms, $1 million in revenue, for example, that are buying products and selling products. A good example, FBA, you know, fulfillment by Amazon. If you know what you're doing, again, that's that big if, right? If you know what you're doing in Amazon, you're doing a good job of getting your VAs to help you buy really good products that you know are going to sell within about 30 days. If you keep that going, you're going to do great. However, there's this issue about buying inventory, right? You know for sure. You've done your homework. You've already tested all this stuff. You know this stuff is going to sell. But guess what? You have to buy it first, right? And then you have to send it to Amazon, and then they're going to sell it. So what happens there then is if you, again, yes, you're always taking a risk. Even if it's your own money, you're still taking a risk. But if you know and you can calculate that risk and say, you know, the chances of this, of me not being able to sell this is very, very, very low. So you can indeed take a loan for $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 off your credit line, and if you've done everything right, you're getting it for $0 or 2% maybe, and you're going to buy that product, sell it within 30 days, pay off your loan, and you're good. Well, you're doing the exact same thing when you're going out and buying with a credit card. Now, here's the big difference. The money and the points that you receive from the airline, right, which gives you free miles, that is by IRS regulation, tax-free money. Tax-free. That means that I have $10,000 worth of flights in this year because of my use of my credit card. I got $10,000 tax-free dollars of income. Now, the IRS doesn't look at it as income. That's exactly why it's not taxable. But you could say the same thing if I got points. Instead of points, I got cash back. Because the way the IRS looks at cash back is it's a return on your purchase. Right? So if you already spent the money, it's money that's coming back to you, so it's not income. Now, there's questionable issues about that, but as far as I know right now, the IRS has not made a point of trying to pursue that. And I should clarify what the questionable point is. The questionable point is that some people would probably, for example, if they work as an employee, they'll run everything through their personal card, try to get points that way, get reimbursed, and that's totally allowable. The IRS just keeps saying, well, we're going to keep an eye on it, but they haven't done anything about it. I don't think they will do anything about it in the future. How do I know that? Well, because I have clients who put up to about $175,000 worth of purchases every single year on their credit card that they get reimbursed on from the company. So that's 175,000 points a year. Okay, that's a ton of cash that comes back. But most of the time, what people like to do is actually airline, because with the airline, it's just totally clear. With the cash, it's not so much. But again, if I were doing your tax return, I would tell you, do not put any cash back that you get from your credit card, do not put it down as income, because all you're going to do is confuse the IRS. Cash back from credit cards is not taxable. The same thing can be said about the points. So, yeah, definitely something not to worry about.
That is such great information to have. And see, it's so simple, and when you explain it, I understand it so well, and yet so many people don't understand all that, and they don't know it. And so if they cut up their credit cards, they are, in my estimation, cutting up one of their streams of income.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
That is so true.
Yeah.
Not only that,
in fact,
but one of the things that happens with credit cards is that, you know, people have this misunderstanding about how the credit industry works. And here's the thing what happens. People will, and this happens to millionaires, by the way. They will say, okay, I'm going to pay everything cash. Okay, great, you pay everything cash, and you don't take any loans out. You don't take loans on cars. You don't take loans on anything. You pay everything cash. Congratulations, beautiful job. And then they go and they want to make a large purchase. Now, that large purchase may very well be an office building, a commercial building. It may very well be a home, a mortgage. And all of a sudden, the bank comes back with, no, I'm sorry, we can't give you that loan. Or they give you an interest rate, which is outrageous. And you
mm-hmm.
go, what are you talking about? I have $1 million in the bank. And the bank will come back with this answer. Yes, you do. And we're very impressed. However, we have no history of your, not ability, willingness to pay. See, there's two things that a bank looks at. Number one is your ability to pay it back. Number two is your willingness to pay it back. When you take out a loan, and by the way, in terms of credit report, in terms of credit history, the best loan you can take out, besides a mortgage loan, that's going to help you on your credit history is a car loan. A car loan is a secure loan. That means that if you default on the loan, they take the car. Okay, so it's probably the easiest loan on the planet to get is a vehicle. So when you get a car loan, that's called a term loan. Unlike a credit card loan, which is a revolving credit, a term loan says that you're going to borrow $15,000 or $30,000, and you're going to pay it over 5 or 6 years or 7 years, whatever that is, and you're going to make this monthly payment. Now, the best thing you can do is obviously get an automatic withdrawal from your account, but you don't have to. You can sometimes give you a lower interest rate if you do that, but you can actually just make sure that you cut the check every time. What the bank looks at that point is, can you make the payment every month? But for those of you who actually have a lot of cash in the bank, more importantly, are you willing to make that payment every month? You know, it's hard for us to believe, but this is absolutely true, that there's a lot of people who have a lot of money in the bank, but they have actually no interest in making their payments on time. You know, I know that sounds ridiculous, but it's true. It is actually really true. So that's what the bank is looking for. So when you think about having a credit rating, one of the things, and I know this is going to sound ridiculous, but I'm telling you, it's 100% true. When we have a company, for example, that we know that we're going to need this credit because, let me give you a simple example. Job Corps is a federal agency that runs education programs for high-risk youth. Here's the cool thing about it. With the federal government, to teach people how to get jobs, it's awesome. However, here's the problem. They want you to fork out the money first. They'll pay you back 100% of your cost, plus a guaranteed profit, but they want you to spend the money first, and then they'll reimburse you. Well, guess what? You have to borrow money, and you have to have a credit rating to borrow that money. That's kind of that's a large scale. On a small scale, you're still talking about the exact same thing. So I have a lot of clients who have a credit line, and the bank will tell them, for example, they have a $500,000 credit line. Well, do you need that credit line? Well, if you don't need that credit line, they're going to lower that credit line to maybe $250,000 or $100,000. Why are they doing that? Because the bank can only allow a certain amount of credit lines of availability, right? Now, so how do we – this is going to sound silly. I hope you forgive me, but it's totally how it works. If you have a $500,000 credit line and you want to keep that credit line, and let's say that you're paying 3% or 4% on that credit line, you know what they do? This is what companies do. They take out $500,000 and they stick it in the bank. I'm not kidding. They stick it in a savings account or a money market account for like 30 to 45 days, right? That makes the bank happy. Then they take it back out and they pay off their credit line. But that's how you keep a $500,000 credit line without being it taken away from the bank. Now, the important thing is that you have that there because you may, especially depending on what industry you're in, and an FBA, by the way, is a perfect example of that because I've got a lot of clients who are doing extremely well in FBA, but again, they've got to move that cash and try to get that inventory going in order to get that profit. Perfect example of FBA is that you can actually take that credit line, you know, you can actually borrow the money, let's say at 4% per year, which is very, very little. You're going to make on that same money, you're going to make about, oh gosh, I don't know, they make a ton of money sometimes. I'm not even going to go into details because then I'll be revealing how much money they make. But you make all this money. So the cost of that money, in other words, what we look at as cost, the cost of that borrowing is minute compared to the amount of money that you just made off of that. Now, if you know what you're doing, that's a good thing. If you're just buying stuff to sell and you have no clue how that stuff's going to sell, that's now you're playing with fire. I don't recommend that at all. But again, if you know that you can actually make that sale within the 30 days and turn it around, believe me, there's a lot of people doing it, and they're doing it very efficiently. And yes, there's always risk. But it's the same set kind of risk as if you throw in your own money. Because shoot, if you don't sell that stuff within 30 days, you know, you're still going to get some fees. If you don't know what you're doing in terms of selling products on Amazon, you're still going to lose money. So it really doesn't matter. Anyway, so that's the issue with credit.
Well, that is all awesome. And I've had an actual problem with my debit card, more so than with my credit cards. And I had a debit card number that was taken when I was in California a couple years back, and I had $6,000 taken out of my account over the course of a weekend. And I went in on Monday to tell them about it, and I said, okay, tell me what to do to fix this. And they said, oh, well, we're sorry. It came out of a business account. And I said, what's FDIC insured? And they go, well, it doesn't really count on business accounts. And so you're out. Sorry. And so I decided right then to not use debit cards anymore. And I know that a lot of people use them because they like the live transaction. model, but to me, it's just been a lot safer to use the credit card model. And plus, I love getting all these points back and all. But actually, the other day I had an incident, and it was a charge for $199. And I just called the credit card and I said, the company, and I said, I want to file a dispute on this client, on this charge, because this was not my charge. And if that had been a debit card and the money was already gone, it would have been hard. But because the credit card company has a different policy, they just said, okay. And I got a note today in the mail that said that it had been, that it was in review, and I was going to be credited back that money. So my advice is to cut up debit cards and get credit cards instead, right?
Yeah, no, I think that's great advice. As a matter of fact, that's the same advice we give all our clients. And yet at the same time, I mean, I know there are situations where you can't get credit and you have to use a debit card. I understand that. However, it's even a lot safer to use cash than it is to use a debit card. And here's the reason. When you use a debit card, you're basically using it's kind of like writing a check. That money is coming straight out of your checking account. So I actually had the exact same situation, Ray, and that's when I started using credit cards, only credit cards, because I had a transaction. It was one of those things where, and it was actually, I think it was through, that wasn't PayPal, it was something similar, but it was through my debit card, and it was some Russian transaction. It really was Russian, something in Russia, and all of a sudden it was like $56 just disappeared, and I called the credit card company. Of course, you know, you notice that on your debit card it says Visa on it, right? So you think it's Visa. So you call, and the bank told me, said, you know, I'm really sorry, that's just money that came straight out of your account, and we can't really do anything about it. You know, I mean, you can go to the police, you can file a report and all these other things, but there's nothing you can do about it. Whereas the credit card is exactly the situation that you described. And the nice thing about credit cards, and this will not happen with a debit card, mind you, the nice thing about credit cards, because since they're the ones who are going to lose the money, when something funny happens on your credit card that is not quite the way you spent, or maybe not spent in the places that you've been to, you're going to get a phone call. And I appreciate that, by the way, tremendously, because I will actually get a phone call and say, hey, by the way, this purchase just came through. Is that you or is that somebody else? And I can't tell you how many times it's been that, you know, I said, well, no, that wasn't me. Or, in fact, it was me. But it was great when it wasn't me to be able to say, no, I don't know where that transaction came from. And they said, you know, we thought it looked funny too, so we'll take care of that. So it never even got to my statement. You know, simply somebody saw it, and they have a great fraud department, and they were able to catch it beforehand. So, yeah, there's definitely a need for people to really kind of stop using debit cards. You know, if you use a debit card, for example, because you have a subscription to something, and they're doing it online, that's not quite as bad because they have it secure. But when you're, you know, yeah, whenever that number's out there, I shouldn't say that really, I guess, right? And anytime that number's out there, it can always be taken somewhere else. So, yeah, I do everything with credit cards, everything that comes through. And a big part of it, I think, you know, to be quite completely honest, it's just simply there's money back. I mean, my mom, Freudian slip, my wife is very frugal, you know. So she's very, very happy when she sees, for example, Costco. You know, we used to go to, we still do, we got six kids. So we go to Costco a lot to buy food, and we get cash back, or we used to get cash back with American Express. And now, of course, we're actually still getting cash back because I'm flying far less than I used to. So we're not using so much the Southwest Airlines, but we're using the cash back with the new Costco Visa because it's just a lot of money. And Dana likes to buy food because we have to feed children. So.
Right. Well, I love it when you give us tips like this that help us save money and be smarter with the money that we do have to spend. And, of course, the bottom line on this whole credit card thing is that you have to make credit cards be your servant, not your lord. And if you let them get away from you, they can take over and ruin your life, which lots of people do warn about. But it's the same thing as a gun. A gun can kill you if you don't know how to use it, and somebody else that does know how to use it can take it away from you and kill you with it. So you have to be very, very careful with tools, and that's what a credit card is. It's a tool that can be used for good or for evil. So it's up to you how it's going to get used. So Mauricio, what are you going to be sharing with us at the conference coming up in August?
Well, on the conference in August, this is something incredibly exciting. Dave and I, basically, through a lot of demand, we've had a lot of phone calls and a lot of people asking us to bring back the business growth secret. So what I'm going to actually show you is those seven steps to building a profitable small business that Dave and I developed. And, you know, you've actually read it, I'm sure, in a lot of the different books that are out there. There's some really, really great business books out there that kind of describe it to you. But what we've done it is basically put it in a way that you can really understand. One of the things that is probably a good thing is Dave and I are not the smartest people on the planet. So a lot of times we have to explain things to each other in the simplest possible manner. So one of the things about, for example, when it comes to even dealing with tax issues, just to really brief on this one, the tax code is written in legislative language. And a lot of times it's very, very difficult to understand what it says. One of the things that Dave and I have is something called humility. And when we read, because we've been humbled enough times, whenever we have a tax issue, you know, that is not just a common tax issue, we pick up the phone and make a lot of calls. And by the way, this is one of the key things that I'm going to share with you here at the seminar, is that, you know, you want to come to this conference not because you necessarily have to talk to me or see me, and because I'm fabulous, by the way, but let's just forget about me for a second. But it's not so much because you have to see me. People who are there, those are the real stars of the conference. In other words, those attendees, see, they're coming to see what you see, but to learn from each other. Let me just give you a real example of that. When I went to learn from John Childers, I met Ray Perry, I met David Garfinkel, I met Armin Morin, I met Stu McLaren. I mean, all of these people are now extremely well known, and they're very, very successful. But back then, not quite as much as they are today. These are the people that you want to connect with. These are the people that you want to call your friends over a long period of time, because when Dave and I have a question, guess what? We pick up the phone and we call a friend of ours who happens to also be in the tax business and say, hey, have you had this situation before, and what's your take on this particular legislation? And that makes us incredibly valuable. We don't have to have the entire tax code in our brain. Okay, so anybody who's listening to this podcast right now, I got to tell you, come to this conference because don't look at the list of speakers and say, oh, wow, great speakers. I mean, yeah, you will as soon as you see my name, but that's not the reason why you want to come. The reason you want to come is because not only do you get some great information, but here's what happens. The really powerful moments happen around lunchtime and at breakfast and dinner. And here's why. You're going to listen to some great information. Some of it you're going to think like, oh, gosh, this is more stuff than I want to learn. Some of it you're going to go, oh, wow, this is amazing. And then comes a break, right? Or then comes lunchtime. And at lunchtime, this is the most important time of the day. This is when you need to find another family, another group of people, and say, hey, do you guys want to go to lunch together, right? This is the most valuable part of the conference. You go to lunch and you discuss, what did you get out of the last speaker? What did you get out of what Ray just said? What did you get what Joe just mentioned? Do you agree with that? Do you disagree? What is your take? What has been your experience? And you begin to build two things. You build a knowledge base, because now you're understanding what you just learned from a different angle, which really helps your knowledge base. But then the second one, which I would even say is even the most valuable one, is you're building your network base. And I hate that word because it sounds like something electronic, but it's not that. I'll call it this. Maybe Facebook has the better idea. You build your friend base, because now you can actually call a friend when you're having struggles in your business, or maybe things are going really well and you want to share with somebody. You can call a friend and tell them, hey, this is what's going on with me. What's going on with you guys? And you can support each other and pray for each other. Oh, my goodness, that is so incredibly important. Pray for each other. Pray for each other's success. So that's really the most important part of the conference. And then, of course, dinner, same thing. And probably for some people, the most absolute most important part of this conference is English country dancing. Is that what it's called? Something like that?
Yeah.
Okay. So the point of it is, though, that's really the key to the conference. And what we're going to share, or what I'm going to share about, you know, the seven steps, is what are those things that we have observed, Dave and I have observed. We've looked, you know, one thing is to read a book, and a whole different other thing is to actually watch it happen and actually help other people grow in that area. So you look at those seven steps that actually have allowed people to go from wherever you are. In other words, you don't have to do all seven steps at the same time. What you have to do is be aware of them. See, most of the time what we have is a client, for example, who is completely overworked. And as David Garfinkel one time told me, he said, you know, it's kind of hard to look at the picture when you're part of the frame. When you have somebody like us who can actually take a look at you and say, hey, by the way, you know, you're really working too many hours putting all this stuff together, you could actually have somebody who can do this for you. And we can actually take a look at their procedures and see what they're doing. Or one that I just mentioned, which we'll talk about at the very beginning, because the first three, we talk about dream it, test it, and distinguish it. Now, there's taking your dream and putting it together. And that first part is probably, in my opinion, is the most crucial part of your business. Once you get that together, then all the other stuff you can actually delegate. But you can't really delegate your dream. You can't really delegate the soul of the company. If you've seen, for example, let's take Southwest Airlines. If you've ever flown Southwest Airlines, you know, you're flying all over the place. It's a different crew every single time they get on the plane. But there's a soul to the firm, so to speak. There's a feeling to the company that everybody who goes through Southwest experiences. And they say, yeah, they're more fun. Yeah, they're more this. Yeah, they're more that. Now, having said that, you know, there's people who just say, hey, look, I like to have my own seat and I like to reserve it in advance. You know, so I fly United, which is great. That's no problem. But my point is, there is a feel for each company, and that feel is really, really, really important for you to make sure that it is what you want, what God's called you to do. Then the other parts of it. Yeah, so then the other parts of it, once you get going there, then the other parts of it, you know, for example, planning it, protect it, measure it, and optimize it, those parts, once you get that core down, and it is so important to get that core down, then the rest of the stuff, you can learn the steps that have to happen, but you don't have to do them yourself. In other words, let's just say protect it, which would be creating an entity that will actually make sure that you don't lose your house and any of your assets that you've acquired. You know, you can do it yourself, but I'll tell you this, if you do it wrong in a court of law, that LLC may not really be a real LLC, you know, or a corporation. So you have to make sure that you do it right, or you have somebody do it for you, whether it be an attorney, or in other words, we incorporate people as well. And you just have to make sure that all that stuff is done right. Cost you that much. It will cost you a lot more if you do it wrong yourself. Trust me on this one. We've seen too many people who, just a simple example, we've seen clients who are paying taxes. Oh, gosh, you know, they're overpaying taxes by $10,000 to $10,000 a year because they can be an S corporation. They really should be, or they can be an S corporation, but they're not. They're just an LLC. But you got to know what you're doing, because at the same time, there are other regulations you have to follow. You have to pay yourself a salary. You have to be on payroll. You have to file an 1120S, which is a corporate return. Again,